Buy low, sell high. Very easy to say, but not always so easy to do. For example, high interest rates are hurting the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices in a lot of markets are falling, even for many of the best assets. So it's no wonder the Fundrise flagship fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its $1 billion real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise flagship fund to your portfolio in just minutes and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/pockets. Fundrise.com/pockets. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise flagship fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.
This show is sponsored by Airbnb. Did you know that I turned one of my first homes into an Airbnb? It's true. And it even helped me get the extra income I needed to launch my real estate career. So if you want to try your hand at making even more income with your property, Airbnb is the place to be. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey everyone, welcome to On the Market. I'm your host, Dave Meyer, joined by Seahawks super fan, James Daynard. What's going on, James?
I woke up so early and I was excited for the day. This is a good day.
You're just a kid in the candy store today. Could you tell everyone why you're so excited?
Well, we have two awesome people coming on. We got Devin Kennard and then we have Cliff Averill, which I'm a huge fan of. I actually think Cliff's one of the most underrated pass rushers that played during that era. He was dominating before he went out of the league. And I'm just a massive Seahawks fan. The only thing we got to get on, we have to get Cam Chancellor on. I did reach out, so you never know.
Maybe now, once we've done this, we can like send him a link to the episode and be like, this could be you. I don't know if that would inspire him, but maybe we can show him that other people and his former teammates are doing it too.
Yeah, big hits. That Cam is known for big hits, but yeah, I'm stoked. This is it was a fun, great show, and I'm just anytime we bring on athletes, I sign up. Put me in, coach.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, the conversation is so good. They really have some applicable lessons, and you know, they're obviously athletes. They come from the world of professional sports, but everything they say really applies to general investing and people, you know, a lot about being a member of a team that I really thought was really interesting about how knowing your role on the team and building a team around what you're good at and augmenting and supplementing your skills. So I think it's super interesting. They're really great investors and it seems like they're doing some incredible stuff right now. So we talk about all sorts of stuff, everything, how to get started, how to vet syndicators, what they're doing in today's current market. So I think you're going to really enjoy the show. Was there anything in particular you think people should listen out for?
No, I agree. Just building that team and then sticking to what you know. And I did also like how they're going over their performas and how they know that they're responsible to evaluate that asset and to punch as many holes as possible in it. So just saying it. We're doesn't matter who you are, we're all following the same rules and the same basics.
Absolutely. All right, well, let's get into it. But first, we're going to take a quick break.
Spring into healthier habits this season with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Their fresh, never-frozen meals are chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. It's delicious without the dishes. With more daylight, sometimes it can be easy to lose track of time and get behind on things like dinner prep, but not anymore. Factor's 35 weekly options include different diets like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie Meals, and they keep you fueled and feeling good no matter your schedule. If you're looking for gourmet meals, Factor has those too. You can try meals with premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, and broccolini. You can customize your meals with the flexibility to get as little or as much as you need. And discover more than 60 add-ons you can have every week, like breakfast or on-the-go lunch, snacks, beverages. So no matter what, you're always eating right. Head to factormeals.com/market50 and use code MARKET50 50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code MARKET50, MARKET50, at factormeals.com/MARKET50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
This show is sponsored by Airbnb. Did you know that a long time ago, before I ever started my real estate business, I turned one of my first primary residences into an Airbnb? And that's the extra income that I needed from Airbnb that gave me the confidence to go out and work for myself and eventually quit my 9-to-5 job. And now I have dozens of Airbnbs all over the country. I've even partnered up with the old David Green on a recent property in Scottsdale to take our portfolio to the next level. And of course, we host it on Airbnb. But you don't need to be a full-time real estate investor to start on Airbnb. As a matter of fact, I was self-managing 10 properties while working my 9-to-5 job, so I know anybody can do it. Think about it this way. You're looking for extra income and going on a vacation. Wouldn't it be great to rent out your space and let your property pay for itself while you're gone? I did this one time. I pitched my wife and my roommate, because we were house hacking, on the idea of renting out our home, and it paid for all of our expenses on a trip to Mexico City. So go and give it a try. It might just change your life, just like it did mine. And I really do mean that. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Cliff Averill and Devon Kennard, welcome to On the Market. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thanks for having us. Thanks for having us. And, you know, I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure, man. Thank you for having us.
All right. Well, for those of our listeners who don't know you, could you each just introduce yourself and give us a little background with both with football and with real estate? Cliff, let's start with you.
Oh, wow. 10-year NFL vet, Pro Bowler, Super Bowl champ, beat some of y'all Broncos. you know, and I've been retired for 5 years now, and I'm living the dream through real estate and some of the things that I've learned through the NFL and applying it to the real estate game.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being here. What about you, Devon?
My name is Devon Kennard. This is my 9th year in the NFL, going into 10 next year. I've been investing in real estate since my first year in the NFL. I own 22 properties, and I'm also a limited partner in a number of syndications. So I love real estate. I love playing football. And I've had my fair share of dubs in the 12 land too. So I see James with the Cam Chancellor jersey. I remember those days. I got some dubs that way.
Well, you didn't get dubs on us there, did you?
No, when I was in New York, they got us there. But
I was there for that game.
Yeah, it was one of my first years in the league. Actually, funny story, I remember Marshawn Lynch ran over our middle linebacker, and I was like right outside of him. I saw him running smooth over.
Welcome to the NFL.
It was my rookie season, and I'm like, oh my goodness, yeah, I'm here now.
Was that Super Bowl year? I think that was Super Bowl year, huh?
I think it was, bro. I'm turning the playback with my right shoulder, and the middle linebacker has him clean in the hole. Marshawn runs him smooth over. I just remember quinging. Ooh. that was one of my first big memories. I'm like, yeah, you got to lower your pads on Marshawn.
All right, so I'd love to just start with learning about how you both got started in real estate. It sounds like you both have built impressive portfolios. Cliff, I'm curious, were you investing while you were still in the NFL, or has this sort of been since you retired?
No, yeah. So I was an investor in real estate throughout my career while I was in the league, you know, through different syndications and funds and different things like that. And, you know, that was my first taste of kind of getting into the real estate game from an investor standpoint. You know, I had purchased some homes. Actually, one of my best investments was my very first home that I purchased for my mom. That's pretty much doubled in price that we still own. But I was an investor while I played, and then I decided once I retired to kind of dive deeper into it and start, you know, kind of building my own portfolio. Because once you read in between the lines of those syndications and docs, you know, you start seeing all the fees that are associated with it. You know, and you know, you kind of change your mind a little bit and say, hey, let me see what I can do myself. And see how I can kind of keep some of those returns for myself.
And what about you, Devon? You're still in the NFL. What inspired you to get started when you obviously have a full-time job?
Yeah, I think for me, it started actually when I was in college. You know, coming into college, I was like a top 5-star recruit, top defensive end, outside linebacker in the country. And I had a lot of injuries while I was in college, and it made like reality set in. So where I was like, what am I going to do if football didn't work out for me? So I started to have mentors and connect with different people, and real estate stood out for me. So after my rookie season in the NFL, I started to get into syndications. I got into my first syndication, but I always wanted to kind of balance the two. I thought syndications were a good way to build passive income, but I also wanted to build my own personal portfolio. So I started going to different meetups in the off season after my first year. And I bought a single family property in Indianapolis from a turnkey provider. And that was kind of the first property that got me rolling. And I've just kind of kept stacking from there.
So how did you, because real estate, I mean, it is definitely what I invest only in. I'm kind of a one-dimensional investor. But as you know, where a lot of athletes go to the NFL, they get these bigger contracts, and then they sit down with these financial planners, and there's so many different investment platforms out there. You know, I mean, we've seen, you know, just investing across with like a financial planner, or crypto's been really big the last 2 years. We've seen a lot of athletes kind of endorse that. How did you guys select, like, why real estate with all the different platforms out there? What made you like zone in on real estate? I know for me, it was about like, well, I wanted to own what I was investing in, and that's what got me into my first deal at 19. But why did you guys hone in on it?
For me, you know, being out here in Seattle, you know, I've been fortunate and blessed to meet quite a few individuals that are very successful, you know, whether you're talking about, you know, the CEO of, obviously, you know, CEO of Zillow and all these different individuals, and you meet them all. And one thing was common: they all own real estate. They might have not been in the business of real estate, but they all owned a lot of real estate. And I would always ask questions, and you know, obviously the tax benefits, the cash flow, all these different things. I'm like, man, if the wealthy people are doing that, because out here I joke around all the time and say, you know, as athletes, you know, if you're in some of these smaller markets, you might be the top earner in those cities. But here in Seattle, you might not come top 3,000, 4,000. You know what I mean? So being around all those folks that are doing better than you, it exposed me to, you know, the real estate game, and just understanding that how valuable it can be. As you know, taxes are always going to be probably some of our biggest expense. So if you can mitigate them through different ways of investing and making money, why not? So that was kind of my approach and how I got into it.
Yeah, I would say I definitely agree with that for myself as well. But when I first got into the league, I had a financial advisor, and it was mostly a traditional guy who was trying to get me into stocks and all that and do what everybody else was doing. And I was looking at it, and I came into the NFL with a vision of like, I wanted to create enough income to where when I'm done playing, I can sustain my life off of the income that I have generated. And all the investments that he was recommending and getting me into in the stock market was speculative. Like, it was going up, it was going down. I wasn't pocketing anything. And I was like, this isn't helping solve the problem that I feel like we have as professional athletes. You play for a certain amount of time, you get out of the NFL, what income do you have coming in? And the stock market didn't seem to solve that problem for me. So that's where I started to look outside of my financial advisor, listen to other mentors, listen to, you know, Bigger Pockets and read books. And I'm like, real estate was kind of the solution. And I kind of had to teach myself, because I didn't know a lot of people in my position who was really building out primarily real estate portfolios to, you know, build their portfolio and create their wealth. So it was kind of trial and error, to be honest.
Trial and error works in this business, as long as you take steps.
That's huge, though. I would agree. Like, trial and error, it just taking the steps, you know, not kind of going back to what Devon was just saying, as far as for, you know, all of us athletes, when we first get into the NFL, NBA, everyone's, you know, pushing the financial advisors. And I have one, and I've been with them for 15 years now. And what I appreciate about my financial advisor, which I've come to realize is very different from a lot of other ones, are, one, he teaches you what you're investing in. Two, he's not like most financial advisors don't want you investing outside of them, because obviously they don't get paid with the capital that you deploy in other assets. So, but like, my guy is very much behind that. He is very much behind helping me understand, you know, from a tax perspective, being a CPA as well, helping me understand the value of investing in real estate, how to, you know, capitalize and making sure that you're you're being efficient in how your business is running. So for me, my experience has been a little bit different from a financial advisor standpoint, but I do hear a lot of stories of financial advisors kind of pushing you away from real estate and you know, diversifying your portfolio.
It's so funny you say that. I have been looking for a financial advisor myself and spent honestly months just looking for anyone who could have like this kind of conversation with me about real estate. Just like a casual, yeah. You know what I'm talking about. You know the difference between a syndication and a house flip. And like I found five of them, like yeah. The entire country. They just don't exist.
It's hard, man.
And it's so weird, right? Because like, honestly, stocks and bonds, like it doesn't vary that much. And there's this whole industry to help you like customize your portfolio. And like, what are you really customizing? You're buying index funds. Yeah. Whereas like real estate is actually hard and you need to like customize it a lot, but there's not a lot of people out there to teach you how to do it. But I guess that keeps James and I in a job. So that's pretty good.
But it goes back to what I was saying though, right? Like they're not compensated for things outside of their, like what they present to you, right? So most won't do that. That's not a great business plan for them, if you think about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So most of them won't even try to learn that aspect of it because, you know, it's kind of taking money out of their pockets.
I think that's very key because I've gone through different financial advisors early in my career trying to find a good fit, that became a rule of thumb for me is if I bring some of the deals that I'm doing and I've evaluated them and I know they're pretty sound deals and all this, and I present it to them and they're telling me I shouldn't do that or I should only do what they have, that is an automatic red flag because you're not giving me unbiased advice anymore. You're you know, slowing me towards everything that you have. And if it's not from you and your group and your fund, you know, whatever, then you're kind of telling me it's no good. And that's just not the case many, many of the times. So finding somebody who's going to be open and transparent. And I think that's the wrong game. So my financial advisor now, his mindset is more so like, I'll help you evaluate things you're doing outside of me because if it's successful, it's going to increase your revenue, increase your net worth, which is then going to have more money so that I can potentially invest for you down the line. So having someone who has that long horizon in mind and isn't just trying to get the immediate win with just do what I tell you type of deal, I think that's really important.
Yeah, the overall big picture of like the client, right? Like, because we work on the client side of the business for real estate, it's like, well, I mean, and what people should be doing is diversifying and investing in all different asset classes. Like, that's the safest way to do it. I don't do that because I seem to lose money every time I put it in anything but real estate. But I think that's called the sell away, right? Like, in a lot of these big firms, when you sign up as a broker, you're not allowed, you sign like a sell away agreement. You're not allowed to offer other investments, from what I understand. Maybe I'm wrong there, but. And so like, as you guys started getting into real estate and you're talking to financial planners and then you chose real estate, it sounded like both of you invested in like a syndication deal first, or so you're investing in someone else's processes, which is kind of a scary thing for a lot of investors when they're making that first step. You know, I know even for me, I did some passive investing the last couple of years where I invested in other operators, which I've never done before. And it was kind of nervous. So like, as you know, with you guys getting new into real estate and you were just learning, how did you make that first selection of which operator you were going to put the money into? How did you vet that person? You know, because there is a lot of, you hear stories, right? Like, I think there was one up a couple months ago where it was an athlete suing an operator, an investment advisor, because they gave him bad advice. And you know, there's a lot of bad advice and there can be bad deals out there. And you got to be kind of cautious. How did you guys take those steps and vet through that?
For me, you know, I've kind of just over time created criteria of why or who I'm going to invest with, right? Because at the end of the day, you're investing in the jockey, right? I do some private equity investing as well and different things like that. You're investing in the jockey, you're investing in the operator, but in knowing that, now you got to do your due diligence of what their resume is, right? Like, and I'm going to always be able to go back to football as an analogy, and it's no different, right? Like, you get this first round draft pick that you just draft, you're going to look at his film from previous years to see why you're going to draft this guy. So it's no different with individuals that I work with. I need to see your resume, just like I assume and I hope that you're going to do the same with me as far as for what I know in the real estate game if you're going to invest with me. And so for me, as I was going, it was, you know, referrals, it was references from different individuals. Okay, have you work? Do you work with solely athletes or do you work with other individuals? Like, that plays a big role for me too. If you only work with athletes, I don't want to work with you. You know what I mean? Like, because where there must be a niche there, and there must be some kind of ignorance or something. I don't know what it might be. So I need to know all the different individuals that you're working with as well. So for me, it's just, I have a criteria of different different things that I look for. Also, again, my financial advisor is very involved with that as well. They'll go to meetings with me and poke holes through, you know, some of the pitch decks and different things that people might have for us. And we kind of come collectively as a team and figure out if this makes sense to invest or not.
Very similar for me as well. I always say all stars like hanging around all stars. And, you know, it's relevant in football, and I think it's relevant in business. So when I meet someone and I have a mentor or someone that I have some type of business relationship, who are you doing deals with? They usually have the best recommendations, the guys who they've made the most money with, the guys they've had the track record. So I typically start there, and then I start to evaluate and ask questions. What are you looking for in this deal? Why is this a good deal? And then I start to get various deals myself, and I bring it to one of my mentors, my financial advisor, and I usually have two or three people, especially early on when I didn't know what I was doing, and I send them the decks, and I'm like, what do you see? Is this a deal that's similar to the deals that you're doing? What's different? So when it comes to syndications, I started to get an understanding of what people always talking about high fees. What's a high fee? What's a fair fee? You know, what's over speculative? Like, are they factoring in repair and maintenance? Are they hiking up, you know, rents way higher than is realistic? You know, I start to gauge these things based on, you know, conversations you have and what other people are looking at. And then you build that, and it's like, okay, now you kind of have an idea of what to look for, and you have people who, you know, you can come to help you vet it. And that doing that meticulously over and over again, you start to get in a good rhythm and can really see there's trends on good deals and there's trends on bad deals. And you can decide pretty quickly the good from the bad.
That's super good advice. I think that a lot of people, when they start investing in syndications, I was like this, are a little like, I was overwhelmed, and I sort of took people at their word at first, because I was like, man, they know so much more than me. And I was like a little bit afraid to ask questions or to try and poke holes in their business plan. But like, you should do that. And James, you're an operator. I assume as an operator, like, you want investors who understand what they're getting into and like want to ask those types of questions and make sure that like they're 100% on board with your business plan and know what they're getting themselves into.
Oh yeah, that's a big red flag for me. Like, if someone just comes and says, hey, I want to give you money because they have heard stories about us or seen us grow, that's, you know, we slow everyone down. Like, there's, because not only do you have to punch holes, I mean, every investment has holes in it, no matter what it is. It could be the greatest deal in the world, but there's holes there. And you have to look for those. And then not only that, when I'm talking to operators or when we're as operators, we know what those holes are already, and we try to address those immediately. Like, because as operators, it's really important to explain the risk, because, you know, how it's put to me is, you know, you want people, like, everyone's happy when things are going great, right? When 2020 to 2022 is going on, everybody's happy. the problem is with investing, there's cycles. They go up and down. And when you have to get in a foxhole because you're in a bad cycle, you want those like-minded people in that foxhole with you, because the worst thing you can do is jump out of that foxhole and then the whole thing collapses and the whole ship goes down. And so you want to make sure that you have like-minded people in these investments. So as operators, we're also interviewing our investors. Like, we can't, if all of a sudden they freak out, then that's not good for the whole ship, right? And we can't have that thing sink. And so it's just, you have to be like-minded, because also other operators offer different things. Some are short-term, high-yield investment guys, and that's great for what maybe an investor's trying to do, because they don't want to be in a deal for 5 to 10 years. There's guys that are only in deals for 5 and 10 years. The syndication deal I invested in, they said they plan on never selling it. It's like, hey, just be under the pretense we're never selling this one. And I was okay with that, because we're still going to be able to get our money back out after we refi. So just making sure everyone's on a like mind is really important.
So one question I get a lot about syndications, and then we'll move on to some other stuff, but is like, how to get deal flow, especially when you first started. Like, how do you find syndication? So I know you both are probably higher profile than the average on the market listener. But I'm just curious, like, how did you start getting deal flow and syndicators and finding people that you ultimately did trust and decide to invest with?
Well, I'll start. I mean, I'll say on that, you would think like guys are getting tons of syndication opportunities, but there's not too many guys I know who invest in a ton of real estate syndication, to be honest. They get a lot of exposure to REITs and different things like that from their financial advisors, but private syndication, there's not a ton of guys in the locker rooms I've been who are in the kind of deals that I'm in. So that's one to start. So for me, when I first started getting into them, I was looking around like, am I doing something wrong? Because I'm asking people and talking to guys in the locker room, and not a lot of people are in these kind of deals. So that's my experience. And how I started to find these, it was, again, goes to like all-stars, no all-stars. Who's investing in these kind of deals? And like, who are the syndicators that you're working with? What kind of deals? And then you start to create trees of like different people you're networking with that are investing in syndications. What deals are they getting into? Who are the main people running these deals? And you build, you know, kind of relationships with these different syndicators, and it grows from there. So I feel like there's a really organic way that you should go about it, in asking people who are doing it. What deals are you doing? You know, what syndicators are you working with? How successful have they been for you? And then, you know, going from there.
I would agree as far as for, you know, the locker room, most times than not, you know, guys aren't thinking about investing, right? Or guys aren't thinking about, you know, real estate syndications and different things like that. One, guys are young, right? They're not processing it like that. But I was fortunate enough to, when I got to Seattle in particular, I was fortunate enough to be around guys like Marshawn, Michael Bennett, Richard Sherman, all these different guys that were like-minded when it came to investing in what we're going to do with our money. You know, Marshawn said, hey, man, you got to count your chickens. Like, that was a thing in the NFL, like in our locker room. Like, we, as the veteran player for me, when I used to walk into the locker room, we had 6 a.m. workouts and stuff. Myself and Michael Bennett, we controlled the speakers in the locker room. And the first thing we're doing, we're playing Rich Dad, Poor Dad. We're playing different books and audiobooks or whatever, making sure that guys understand, like, this is extremely important too, because this ride can end immediately, you know? So as far as for being exposed to different syndications, it's all about just having the conversations with one another. Oh, man, Marshawn, you're in real estate, man. Who's, you know, like, how are you doing it? What are you doing? Who's bringing you these deals? Oh, man, I'll put you in contact with such and such. Oh, man, Richard, like, what you got going on? Cliff, man, I know you're into real estate. What you got going on? And then, okay, you meet this individual. Next thing you know, you're meeting other people that are doing it. And then you start hearing more and more deals start coming your way. Now it's on you to vet through those deals to make sure that you're not getting got, or, you know, it's the right situation for you. So it just boils down to having a conversation. But networking, you know, money and investing is like religion and everything else, like at the dinner table. Like, no one really wants to talk about it in the locker room. You know what I mean? And for us, it was completely different. Like, we wanted to talk about it because we wanted all of us to be a part of you know, being able to obviously capitalize off the money we've been able to earn on the field. And honestly, I think that's why we were so good. It's because we were truly a brotherhood. We were truly friends that wanted to talk about all the different things that we had going on, and no envy or anything like that came about. And so that allowed us to grow in whatever avenue we decided we wanted to go in.
Yeah, I think that's a good, would you think you guys were so passionate about that? Because that's what it's about, right? That networking and vetting people through referrals and those, I mean, the best deals I've ever done or best people I've ever met is usually through a personal referral. Do you think that your locker room was so into investing because of how many players, when they leave the NFL or leave any kind of, professional sport, you know, like there was some stat that came out, or it was that Sports Illustrated said 78% of NFL players go broke after the first 2 years of their retirement. Mm-hmm. And that's a scary stat, right? Like that's not a high success rate.
No doubt. But now I also want to talk about that stat too, just in general, right? Because you got to think about it. The average is less than 3 years in the NFL, right? So in that 3-year span, have you accumulated enough money to actually be good for the rest of your life? 99% of the time, no, you haven't. Now, have you made some decent money? Yes, but you're also 22, 23, 24 years old, haven't bought a house, haven't, you know what I mean? You're still training and different things like that. So I can understand how some guys may be broke, but also guys haven't really earned that much money to be financially set for the rest of their lives. Usually that's your second contract. Usually that's when you're 27, 28 years old, right? But knowing that stat, for me in particular, I started thinking about that, right? I started thinking about, okay, well, if the average is less than this, all right, I need to start putting money away. I need to start, you know, putting money away in you know, the 401k plan that they have in the NFL, which is pretty solid. I know some people don't necessarily believe in it, but again, I'm all about diversifying and putting money in different places. But the conversations of just talking about what we're investing in, you know, you're starting to see athletes are thinking more about investing in where to put their money, because you see Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, all these guys are making big boy moves, and you're not where they're at financially, but you're thinking that way, right? You're getting that right mindset, and it's all about just not wanting to be part of the statistics as well. So you know, you start to have these conversations with one another, and you know, guys tend to be on the same page.
Cliff, that's an awesome statistical analysis. I love that, being a data nerd. But it's also true, like, if you compare that to how many 24-year-olds just go broke, like, just in general, probably, I think most of us were there at some point being broke. But I love what you're saying about just, like, normalizing the conversation about money and investing. I feel like that's just so important. People don't want to talk about it. It doesn't make any sense. It's exciting. And personally, I think it's kind of fun. I guess that's self-evident. I have a podcast about it. But, I mean, I think it's just so important. Like, if you're of that mindset, to try and teach other people that it's okay to talk about it, and it's fun to talk about it, and it's actually going to really benefit you.
One thing I'm passionate about within that is, like, I've been in a lot of locker rooms, and guys have the assumption that it has to be the star player, and it's that guy who's making all the moves, who's doing all of that, and all the other guys, like, it's like this kind of unsaid thing where you got to, like, football better be your life. You got to be locked in, you know, if you want to keep making it, if you want to do this. And being a person who I feel like I've been kind of in the middle, like, I've never been a Pro Bowler. I'm not, you know, going to be a Hall of Famer one day. I haven't won a Super Bowl, but I've been blessed enough to have a very long and successful career. So I can relate to some of these guys who've in the years 3, 4, 5, 6 years, but maybe didn't sign a mega deal. Like, no, it's just as important, if not more, for you to start to build out in investments, to look at things differently. But a lot of those guys, which is the majority of the locker room, are so locked in on just trying to survive as long as they can in the NFL that they don't, you know, revert any of their attention to what they need to be doing outside of football. So, you know, in the locker rooms I'm in, I have a lot of conversations with those guys, because, you know, I was just with Arizona, and it's like, it's not just Kyler Murray and J.J. Watt and A.J. Green and those guys who need to be making moves in our locker room. It's the guy who's in year 3 who, you know, is hoping to get another deal. Like, what are you doing with the money you've accumulated? And how can you, even if you don't have enough to sustain you the rest of your life, how can you use the money you've made to propel you into the next thing? And helping guys kind of think that way, I think, is really important, and the difference in the locker room.
But to go also to add on to that as well, I think it's a confidence thing. And I'm not just even talking about athletes, right? We're talking about money in general, right? It's not something that's taught in school. You know, financial literacy is not something that's taught across America. So people aren't confident talking about something they don't really know much about. Now, when you bring the athlete's perspective into it as well, it's the same thing. Now I got a couple of dollars. I still don't know what to do with it. Like, like TV tells me I should go buy this Rolls Royce. And that's probably, that's the dumbest thing to go do, right? So, like, it's a confidence thing in understanding financial literacy. So as we know better, as athlete people, as we understand money, and we got to give the game back to the youth so they can do a little bit better as they come through the ranks as well. But I think it's more of a confidence thing, and just know, like, you're not confident because you don't understand it or you don't know it.
That's such a good point. I mean, yeah, like, you wouldn't want to go talk to someone about something you don't feel comfortable with. It almost feels like you kind of want to, like, go home and learn a little bit by yourself so that you're, like, mm-hmm. at least literate enough in financial terms to be able to have those conversations, which is great. Why, I guess, like, why you're putting Robert Kiyosaki and Rich Dad Poor Dad on the on the workout playlist. I mean, I thought I listened to some pretty nerdy things while I work out, but that's another level right there. But it's helpful, I think, to just give people that like background knowledge so that you can start having those conversations.
And Devin's going to have to start bumping the OTM on the market. Devin, I want
every blogger
on the market, every live podcast.
I'll max it.
So you guys have both been actually fairly active investors, like passively, actively for the last 5 to 8 years. And, you know, it's been a little bit of a different market. We've seen the ramp up, you know, 2012 is kind of when the market started really turning a corner again, at least in the Seattle market it did, I'd say 11, 12. And then we saw the craziest market I've ever seen in 2020, 2022, where there were some really massive gains going on. And how is you guys in going through, because this is going to be your guys' kind of first cycle, right? Like, I know when I was really young, I was in real estate, and how I got started was in door knocking and wholesaling. And then 2008 happened, and I learned a lot of major lessons at that point. And, you know, we're not going into the same thing as that, but we're going through a different dip in the cycle. And I know, how have you guys, what have you guys been doing to change with the market, or as passive investors, what are you guys looking for? Or as projects that you're getting involved in, how have you guys gotten more cautious on the deals you're looking at, or are you guys in the middle of deals right now that you're having some issues in? Because, you know, that's always that learning curve, right? The markets are good, and then they're not good, and then they can level back out. And it's just those constant waves that you got to ride as an investor. What kind of lessons have you guys learned, or what has been happening with your projects in the last 9 months?
For me, I think it's all about being creative, getting creative. You know, I just closed on an apartment building about 2 months ago, and we did seller financing, right? The terms made sense. The interest rates and everything else made sense. So we pulled the trigger on it. So I think it's just all about being creative and how you're financing, because money's getting more expensive, right? The you know, rents are kind of, you know, rents have been going at going crazy for the longest, and now they're kind of starting to soften up a little bit, right? So you just adjust, and you're performing. For me in particular, I'm very, very conservative in my approach with performance and different things like that. So I never want to be in a situation where I'm upside down because I was thinking rents were going to be $2,400, and right now they're freaking $1,500. Let's just put it at $1,600 or $1,700 or whatever the case may be. So I'm extremely conservative when it comes down to that type of stuff, but I'm still looking for deals. You know, the one quote that sticks with me is Warren Buffett's quote, right? You know, be fearful when everybody's greedy and be greedy when everybody's fearful. I feel like we're about to be in that process right now. We're about to be in a space where everybody's kind of, you know, being fearful. So I think opportunities will present themselves. And now it's all about just getting creative on how to acquire these assets. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough to find different ways of doing so.
The apartments have gotten better in Seattle. The deals are there. Because it was hard to lock down anything decent sized the last 24 months. Now it's like there's really good opportunities out there right now.
No, Seattle is a different beast, man. You know, I don't buy any of my multifamily stuff in Seattle just because it's one, too expensive, a lot of money chasing a lot of the same deals. And so I kind of stay away from that. But in Seattle in particular, we build spec homes, and I'm on the east side in Bellevue. So you being from this area, you understand, like, it's a different ball game as far as for what homes are going for. And it has softened up a little bit. But, you know, we build some spec homes here, and then I take those proceeds and I go buy stuff in the Midwest. I go buy stuff in the Southeast region for cash flow and you know, some appreciation as well.
You know, good news is actually Bellevue's picking up. The last 2 weeks, right out the gate, transactions are moving again. Like, it was in stall mode for 3 to 4 months, and it's mm-hmm. I think it might have just been a lot of seasonal change too. Like, it's the momentum's picking back up. We sold like 7-8 homes in the first 2 weeks of the year.
Yeah, I just closed on a property. We pre-sold it, and it's funny because we pre-sold it early part of the end of 2021, And everyone's like, what are you doing? You're crazy. Like, why would you pre-sell that? You know, you're leaving so much money on the table. And just like my football days, I'm all about guaranteed money. I don't care how big your contract is, how much money is guaranteed. Because if I blow my knee out, I know that's all I'm leaving with, right? So it's the same exact thing, same exact approach with some of our spec homes is, you know, if somebody brings us something that makes sense, we sold it, we pre-sold it. And then at the end of the day, we just closed on it about a week and a half ago. And people were like, oh my gosh, you're a genius for pre-selling and all this other stuff. You know what I mean? I'm like, yeah, because I'm going with the for sure thing. You know what I mean? I'm not chasing the extra couple hundred thousand just to lose a few hundred on the back end.
I would say on my end, a big shift I've made is because I've been playing in the NFL, when I first started investing, I was doing a lot of turnkey properties are close to because I didn't have the time and I didn't feel comfortable enough overseeing rehab jobs, big projects essentially. And now I'm kind of to the point where I transitioned and I've identified certain markets where I can get things off market for way below market value and add more value to them, you know, through renovation and then refinance the whole BRRRR strategy essentially. And you know, I've had a lot of success in the last couple of months, and even right now, I'm going to be closing on a sixplex in Tampa, Florida, and you know, I'm essentially barred off market from a wholesaling team that I've built a good relationship with. I'm buying it cash, so I've been able to get a really great deal on it. Going to put a little more cash in it to do it up, do it really nice. And once again, like Avril said, my assumptions are very conservative. I think I'm going to be able to get 2K plus in rents. I'm assuming I'm going to be able to get 1600, and I feel like I'm leaving a lot of room to be successful in planning for worst case or rents not to go up. I've also started to say in a lot of markets, I've seen rents either stay the same or go down. So I'm keeping my projections as the same for the next couple of years. So where it's like, I don't think that's actually going to happen, but I don't want to be like, oh, in 2 years, I'm going to be able to get 2200 on this. I don't want to make those assumptions right now. I'm keeping it conservative. And if that happens, I'm going to be even happier. So those are the kind of things and how I've transitioned because of, you know, my understanding of real estate, the relationships I have, and the deals that I'm able to get by using capital and you know, getting it back out once I refinance, as opposed to what I did when I first started getting into real estate and buying turnkey or closer to turnkey style properties.
I love that advice about being really conservative, especially right now, given the economic climate, like with rent increases. You know, over the last couple of years, it was safe to assume that rent was going to go up, and now it's really flat and you're seeing a decline. And, you know, when people ask me about like how to underwrite deals, like you said, Devon, I love putting myself in a position where it's great if I'm wrong. You know, like I like to believe that I'm right and like, yeah, it'll be flat. But if I'm wrong, that's even better. So it's just like a win-win situation. So I think that that's great advice for this type of market. Like if you're going to underwrite a deal, assume the worst because it is really uncertain right now. And if it still works and things aren't as bad as they could be, then you'll probably benefit. One thing you both seem to do is invest in multiple locations and markets across the country. So I'm just curious, Cliff, we'll start with you. Like how did you pick those markets? What type of analysis and research do you do?
Oh man. So in the Midwest in particular, I went to Purdue. So, you know, I invest in Chicago in particular because one, my best friend, he was in my wedding and everything. I met at Purdue. He's a GC, right? So as you all know, real estate is the ultimate team sport and football is the ultimate team sport. So I understand that you have to have the right pieces in place to be able to have some success. So I picked Chicago because I had a GC. I had a property manager that I've known for years that is crushing it out there. So that's why I picked the Chicago market. Now, you know, obviously there's tenant laws and different things that you have to kind of deal with a little bit out there. But that was okay because of the cash flow that I knew I was going to be able to get. And come to find out, the Midwest actually has been one of the more stable markets in the country during this little downturn, right? So, but a couple, about a year and a half ago, people would have been saying, why would you invest in the Midwest, you know? So, and then I'm in the Southeast region as well. I'm in Huntsville, Alabama, growing market, great market, a lot going on out there. And my business partner actually put me into that market. She owned a lot of real estate out there. There was a property that presented itself that was actually right next door to her property, and they couldn't take the deal down by themselves. And she brought it to me, and she already had the infrastructure. She had a property manager, she had the GC, she had contractors and different things like that already in place. So it was really just buying into her infrastructure, and we were able to stabilize, and we actually just refinanced a few months ago on that deal in particular. But I'm a big team player. I understand that you need teammates, and how I judge all these things is, hey, I'm the general manager. You know, my asset manager is the doggone quarterback, and our contractors and everybody else is the O-line. Like, that's how we move. That's how we're going to make this thing happen. And again, like, there's a lot of football analogies, but that's definitely how I'm moving, and you know, things have kind of been working out so far.
So as a GM, have you made any bad picks?
There's always bad picks. There's always bad picks, right? There's always gonna be a few bad picks, but I've been, knock on wood, I've been fortunate enough that it hasn't been any bad picks to the point where we've lost money. The deal might not have worked. I might have had to sell it early and you know, get out of it, but we didn't necessarily lose any money. We lost a little bit of time on that property, but we didn't lose anything. So I'm very appreciative of that so far, and you know, hopefully we keep that trend going.
That's definitely the trend you want to stay on.
For sure. And to answer your question, for me, I would agree. I just say it a little differently. Like, I look at the markets where I can find my core four. You know, hear people talk about the core four a lot, and where can I find a real estate agent? Where can I find the proper lending, contracting team, and property management? And if I am, and then what I look at outside of that, is it an area that's growing, and can I scale there? I don't want to go somewhere where I'm only going to buy one property, because a lot of the stuff I look at is single family and smaller multi right now. So where's a market that I have the core for, and there's opportunity to scale? And when I identify those markets, then I'm willing to invest there. So those are the main things that I kind of consider. And it's usually through referrals. Like, you know, maybe someone knows great real estate agent or broker. And that's how it happened for me in Tampa. I actually, through Kathy, met a great real estate agent and team, Kathy Peggy, shout out. That's my, yes, my girl. But I met through her, and then I built a team out in Tampa through networking, and that's why I'm investing in Tampa right now. So if you can get your core four and you believe you can scale, then I invest in that market.
I agree exactly. I mean, you have to have that core four for sure in any and every market that you go into. And of course, you got your market analysis, right? You got to see population growth. You got to see job growth. You got to see all these different things as well in these markets. And, you know, these are all things that I know I'm privy to and that I look at before I go into any market. But having some individuals that you can trust, you know, I think goes a little bit further than just even some of the market analysis. Just having teammates that you can trust that, you know, they're not going to, you know, screw you over as well, right?
Absolutely. It's such good advice, and so many people, I think, obsess, especially if you're investing passively or out of state, like, they obsess about what market to invest in. And I recognize that some of that is my fault, because I regularly, like, publish lists of, like, best markets to invest in. But, like, so much of it is about, like, just developing the right team. And it, like you said, it's a team sport. And, like, you know, the difference between investing in Tampa and Jacksonville and just picking two random cities is probably not that much, like, on average. And if you have a good team, I think you could, like, either one could be better depending on how good your team is. Like, it's not really about the city. There's so much more to it. So I think that's really good advice.
Yeah, to add to that, like, for instance, in Ohio, I love the Midwest too. And I know Cliff was mentioning the Midwest, but I don't really like my team in Ohio right now. I'm probably getting out of some of the stuff I have in Ohio. It's cash flowed great for me, but my property management, I've had a lot of issues. The city of Cleveland's giving me a lot of issues. I'm just kind of over it. When as opposed to another market, like, I'm doing a lot of stuff in Tampa right now, my team seems to be clicking and it's great. So it's like, I know people making a ton of money in Cleveland and in Ohio in general, but it's been a bad experience. I don't really like the team I have, and I've been trying to fix it, and it's just, I'm kind of over it at this point. So I think that's a good testament right there.
But sometimes you got to fire the coach.
You're going to just have it in Denver today?
I'm not really a Broncos fan. Actually, Devon, I'm a Giants fan, so I remember when you were in Giants. Yeah. I just lived in Denver, so I sort of like the Broncos.
Don't be surprised when the Giants beat Philly. I'm calling it right now. They ain't got nothing to lose, and Philly ain't hot right now.
Dude, this is what the Giants do. They sneak into the playoffs, and every, like, 5 to 7 years, they somehow, like, make this miraculous run through the playoffs and win despite all odds and other teams being better than them. So we have a track record of being successful like this. I think it's our year.
Yeah, but y'all don't have Manning back there.
I know.
They got some heart.
Anyway, well, the last question I wanted to ask you guys before we get out of here is, Cliff, you made a comment about this at the beginning that there are some things you've learned in the NFL and as an athlete that you apply to your real estate investing career. And I was curious what those lessons are.
Yeah, no, I mean, I feel like this is any space, right? As far as for any profession, I feel like there's just a few different things that honestly separates people from having quote unquote success in their profession. And it's going to be the hard work. It's going to be consistency, and you got to be all in, right? You got to be all in with the NFL in particular. Like, part of the problem, we talked about guys going broke and not investing and different things like that, is because they're all in. They're not even worried about their money right now. They're all in into this particular space right now because they just want to get playing time. They want to get to the new deal, but they're not thinking about, okay, what's going on with their money. Now, I'm not giving them an excuse or anything. I just know firsthand, you know what I mean? And so it's no different with the real estate game. Like, I truly like this. Like, before I got on call with you guys, I'm running through Buildium and I'm looking through making it, who's delinquent, who hasn't paid. Man, we got 3 vacancies. I'm every single day. That's my life right now, you know, and I really like it. So, you know, applying those things. And then I talked about earlier, right? Being the GM, having the quarterback as the property manager, having your contractors as the O-line, like really putting that, like those analogies, but that's really how I construct my business and how I'm moving in this space, right? So that's kind of how and what I've learned, and I'm trying to apply those same things in the real estate game and also my business.
What about you, Devon? Is there anything you've learned that from being an athlete that translates to your investing career?
I would kind of relate, in it's about building the team around me that fits what I need. Being on a football team my whole life, I play a certain role on my team. I have a certain skill set, and making sure I surround myself with the individuals I need that's going to get the best out of me and it's going to allow me to focus on what I'm best at. And I think that's no different in real estate. So in football, it's, you know, I'm an edge setter. I've always played the run really well. I want to make sure that I'm in a position where I'm able to always do what I'm best at. What helps me do that? Film study, recognizing formations, all of these different things. What's something that I've never been known for necessarily? I haven't had a double digit sack season in my career. So I need to work on pass rushing. What do I do in the offseason? I hire a pass rush coach. I really put emphasis on my pass rushing. So I approach real estate the same way. What am I naturally good at? I think one of my strong suits is networking, building relationships, kind of big picture seeing it. But I need people to help me with the specifics. I've never put hammer to nail. I need a good contractor and good property management so I can understand it, but also who's going to be overseeing those kind of things. And that's really pivotal. So understanding my strong suits and knowing where I need really strong teammates and players that's going to help me, you know, get to where I'm trying to go. So I think when you can relate football to real estate in those ways, it's allowed me to scale faster and build the people around me that I really need.
Yeah, and I really like that. Like, it's sticking to what you know. And if you do, so, like, we do really well as investors in Seattle because we stick to what we know. We're not like, we go after heavy value add where we can structure the deal right. We have that construction background. And it's the best way as you're going through a transition market to mitigate risk too. If you know what you're like right now, my buy box is sticking to what I'm really good at. Like whatever my teams are ready to go with, that's what I'm buying. It has nothing to do with liquidity. It's how well can we execute that plan. And I think that's really important for today's market. And then as you're learning things, like he was saying, he's on the offseason, he's working on his pass rush, he's working on his edge setting. Like, those are things that you can take the step into. But as we're in that transitionary market right now, stick to what you're really good at. And if you're really good at it, there's less people competing with you too. So the buy opportunities are better. In addition to, you know how to maximize that deal, and that's where the spreads are. When people are a little bit freaked out right now, if you stick to what you're good at, you're going to get the best possible deal at what you're really good at.
I also, to elaborate on that too, I also think, you know, with real estate in particular, right, you know, there's so many different ways of making money in real estate. You know, you can be a wholesaler, you can buy and hold, developments, all these different things. So the hard part about real estate is the shiny object syndrome, right? And trying to spread yourself thin. But correlating that with sports in general, it's only been a few players that can play two sports and be a pro at them, right? Like, there's not that many guys that can do that, right? So know what you're good at, stick to it, focus, be all in on that, and be great at that. Right? Be great at pass rushing. Like, that was my thing. I was a pass rusher. I set the edge when I need to, but I'm getting after your quarterback. So I know who I am, and that's the lane I'm going to stay in. And it's the same thing with real estate. Like, I want to buy multifamily properties. I want to buy value add multifamily properties, and I'm going to hold on to them. I'm going to cash flow the mess out of them. And then, like I said, I do spec homes here on the east side of Seattle. And that's what I know what goes into that, and I use those funds to go buy those assets that I'm talking about. But, like, that's my niche. That's my lane. I want to grow in that space and get better at it and hopefully become a Pro Bowler and a Super Bowl champ at.
Well, that was a great way to exit. That was a quick walk-off. So now we got to end the podcast. Well, we are out of time. So I just want to thank you both for being here. But just wanted to ask you, Devon, where can people connect with you if they want to learn more about what you're doing or follow your progress?
You can find me on all social media at Devon Kennard, and then also my website, www.devonkennard. I also have a book coming out in April. It's all about financial literacy and real estate investing. So check that out. You're going to be able to pre-order here soon. So make sure you follow me on social media and stay tapped in.
Awesome. That's great. Well, congratulations on the book. Thank you. What about you, Cliff? Where can people connect with you?
Yes. All my real estate stuff is on TikTok. At Cliff Averill, A-V-R-I-L. All my real estate stuff is on TikTok, but I'm also on Instagram as well. So you can follow me there and get snippets of some of the stuff that I post on TikTok. And before we leave as well, I want to let you guys know I'm a big fan of the show, On the Market. I kid you not. I listen to every single episode whenever they drop. Like this morning, I kid you not, like, all I listen to is real estate podcasts in general, but On the Market with you guys, when you guys do the panel and everything else, I love it, man. Keep up the good work.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. We appreciate that. All right. Well, Devon Kennard and Cliff Averill, thank you guys so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us, man.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate you guys.
Was that just a dream come true for you?
It really was. Just any time that we can bring on a Seahawk player or any athletes, I'm all in on that show. I'm just permanently requesting a panel spot for those shows.
Oh, yeah. Well, so after we finished recording the interview, we were just saying goodbye to Devon and Cliff right before we were recording this. And Cliff revealed that he is actually a fan of On the Market and listens to this show. And was that when we were recording?
I don't know if it was when we were recording, but I just had an idea. We should get him a Seahawk jersey that says On the Market on the back. I'm totally getting this.
Well, either way, we should do that. But either way, I just wanted to know what it felt like for you as, like, a diehard Seahawk fan to have a Seahawk legend tell you that he was a fan of what you're doing.
I'm not going to lie. I was having flashbacks of when they won the Super Bowl against the Broncos. It was like, I felt almost that good.
Oh my God. Yeah, I can imagine. That's a pretty cool experience. Well, that was super fun, you know, fanboying and all. That was really insightful. I think that they both have really good perspectives, and it's really just interesting to hear a little bit about how different people get involved in real estate even while they're in their career. Because, you know, like obviously being a real estate, being an NFL player, this high profile thing. But I think what they were saying really applies to anyone, regardless of what career you have. It's about like talking to, you know, your friends and your colleagues, normalizing discussions about money and investment and trying to help each other, building out your team. You know, these aren't things that are necessarily just restricted to NFL athletes. It's for anyone who's trying to build a portfolio while they're in a full-time job.
Yeah, it's all the basics, and they have their stories matched up with how we all got started. Like, you know, Cliff was saying he bought properties because he had a general contractor in that market that he knew really well and trusted. Right. I mean, I did the same thing when I first bought my first big project. I hired a friend of mine because I trusted him. And it's the same beginning steps. And it was really cool to see that you know, because a lot of times, too, sometimes it's like, oh, these athletes, they have a lot of money. They just put the money to work with these managers. But they're doing the day to day stuff that we all do, making sure rents are collected, going through their own performance and checking them out, right? They're not just going off of people's words, but it's that same day repetitive stuff that we do as investors, and they're doing it and doing well.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was great and learned a lot. I do, you know, we were joking about making a show where James goes knocks on doors with NFL players. Maybe that will be our OTM spinoff sometime soon.
You know, I'll feel pretty safe if I'm at a bad house with a big 300-pound lineman behind me.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, dude, the other thing I forgot about that I thought was so funny was Cliff said something. He was like, yeah, all those financial advisors tell you to buy a Rolls Royce. That's the stupidest thing you could do. You know, Jamil just bought a Rolls Royce.
Oh my God, I was dying. Whenever he was the Coconan or whatever, I was absolutely dying.
It's so funny. I don't think Jamil would argue that it's a good financial decision, though, but it's probably fun.
No, I don't understand that. Yeah, you can buy a truck, too, that's also a write-off and costs a third as much.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, that was a lot of fun. Appreciate you being here, James. I know everyone who knows who you are, but if they haven't connected with you in a while, where should they reach out to you?
A good place to find us is on Instagram's an easy place, jdaneflips, or at jamesdaner.com. You can get more information from us and more tips on investing.
Awesome, great. And I am at The Data Deli on Instagram, where you can find me. If you have any feedback about these shows, have any questions, hit up either James or I. And if you like this show, please make sure to give us a 5-star review on either Apple or Spotify. We really appreciate those reviews. If you've been listening to the show, haven't done it yet, please go do it now. It will be a great help to us. Thanks again for everyone who's listening out there. We'll see you next time for On the Market.
On the Market is created by me, Dave Meyer, and Kaylin Bennett. Produced by Kaylin Bennett. Editing by Joel Esparza and Onyx Media. Research by Pooja Jindal. And a big thanks to the entire Bigger Pockets team. The content on the show On the Market are opinions only. All listeners should independently verify data points, opinions, and investment strategies. The market is changing. Finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom. And the best investors know it's not about timing the market. It's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into the real estate investing game or take your game to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals. Enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and boom, instantly match with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only. Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own. Investments in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.